Hello and welcome to episode 2 of Touchline for zipsportsmedia.com. I'm your host Sean Watson, and once again I'm alongside Mirror Football's Aaron Flanagan. How are you doing, Aaron?
Yeah, good, thank you.
I've got my phone turned off this week. I'm out of pocket from last week, so I won't be paying any more fines this week. So
yeah, no, I've had a few nice drinks off you.
I keep forgetting to we've actually purchased a new microphone for this week. So last week I was toing and froing between me and Aaron between who's on the mic, but Aaron's got a mic clipped to him. We've gone high tech this week.
I've never had one of these before. I actually attached to me. It's weird. Keep looking down, keep thinking it's like a little bug on my shoulder. But.
Well, we've gone big time now, so yeah. It's going to be a weird one. But thanks for joining us once again. I hope you enjoyed last week's episode. We had a lot of good feedback for that from various different sources. And we got a good what's the word? A good viewership? Do you listen?
Yeah, it's an audience. I think we maybe had a bigger audience than we... first anticipated for a first episode as well.
Yeah, so those that did tune in, thank you very much. If you didn't tune in, why not? But thanks for tuning into this episode. This episode, we're going to basically pick up where we left off. First of all, we left off last time talking about the prospect of what would be a fantastic Manchester derby.
It was great.
And I think it was, yeah. I was just going to say the same. For those that don't know the outcome, I don't know where you've been, but obviously... Manchester City prevailed 2-1 winners in what was a really, really weird game of football.
It was unexpected, really. Obviously, a lot of people beforehand probably tipped United as favourites. I think we did on here. I, as a City fan, said I'd take a draw. As a United fan, you said no, we need to win, which says it all about what we were thinking going into the game. But City just came out of the blocks and were absolutely phenomenal. They played football on a level which City haven't played for a few years now, not since they last won the league. The way they just moved the ball in, and they made United are a team full of world-class footballers, and they didn't let them have a touch.
No.
And as obviously, yeah, things kind of changed in the second half, it developed, but the game already seemed past United.
Yeah, it did.
And City were just absolutely sublime, and well deserved the victory that day.
I said the same. I thought City were excellent. I didn't think United were particularly bad, but some have said they were poor. What do you think they were poor?
Yeah, I do. I think they were just losing. The midfield was poor. Obviously, you had Fellaini and Pogba in there who were quite anonymous. It's not quite clicked for Pogba yet.
No.
Fellaini, he's had an all right season, to be fair to him. I think he's exceeded expectations. I think a lot of people looked at Fellaini and thought, he's going to be one of the ones who's going to get the boot under Mourinho, and yeah. he has looked a lot better. But
but for me, he's not a holding midfielder. He's not technically good enough to play in the midfield.
No. Well, at the end of the day, you've got two players playing as your holding midfielders in that game, in Pogba and Fellaini, who don't want to be playing as holding midfielders.
Yeah.
And then obviously you have the Wayne Rooney debate, which I'm sure we'll end up talking about later. But where does Rooney play? Rooney's going to fit into the midfield. One of these players has got to play out of position. And for United, it just seemed like there was no cohesion in midfield. There was nothing there, and that's where they lost it. City were brilliant in the centre of midfield.
They were. De Bruyne and De Bruyne in particular, but like I said, the whole of the midfield were far superior to United's midfield. And they didn't have any problem up front. And we thought they might have with Aguero missing out, but... Iheanacho got his goal. I want to talk about Iheanacho in a minute because I've got an interesting point to make. But Manchester City all over the pitch, first half especially, were outstanding, and it worries me that they were that good. I'll be honest, as a United fan, it did worry me because I see them running away with the league.
Well, I mean, you look at it as well, and you think in before the derby, obviously Leroy Sané came on and made his debut in the derby off the bench. Gundogan didn't even play in the derby. He's going to be a regular feature in the team. They've got Gabriel Jesus coming in January. Who knows who else City are going to buy in January? You know, they have that spending power, and they're just going to get better and better and better. And the thing that's impressed me most about City is the fact that players who you didn't expect to do well under Guardiola have done well. People like Kolarov, who looks like a reformed player. Fernandinho looks like he's playing the best football of his life in like a reformed defensive midfield turned almost sweeper position at sometimes. You know, he's that far back.
Well, that for me was where the problems came from United, because Rooney's job was to mark Fernandinho and he didn't do it. And from there, Fernandinho basically ran the show, dictated the pace of the play and everything else. And for me, that was where the problems lay. And United didn't get going until the game was past them, like you said.
Yeah, and obviously United had a few problems in the couple of games afterwards and briefly against Northampton as well.
Well, that didn't surprise me at all. I had a point to make about Iheanacho, and the point is this. Marcus Rashford has got all the praise and the plaudits for his start to his career, and fair play to him, he's been tremendous.
Yeah, fantastic.
But I saw a stat the other day that Iheanacho's goal to game ratio is actually better,
and his assist per game ratio is better as well.
There you go. So the point I'm making is, why is it that Rashford's getting the plaudits and Iheanacho's basically not going under the radar, but he's not getting the acclaim that he deserves?
I think the fact that Rashford's English is probably part of it. It's exciting to have such a promising Englishman. Obviously, we talked about England on the last episode and how there is a young and exciting squad there. And Rashford is part of that. And the whole country has a reason to be excited about Rashford. I find Rashford easier on the eye to watch as well, because he gets on the ball, he takes people. And there's not many players in the Premier League these days who actually get on the ball and they actively want to take people on, actively want to get around people and create something. And with his pace and his ability, Rashford is absolutely superb at that. Iheanacho is a completely different player. That's why maybe some of the comparisons between the two are, maybe not. Maybe it's not right to compare them, basically. But Iheanacho is just a goal scorer. He gets himself in the box, he gets himself in the right positions. But the great thing about him is that he sees what's around him. He doesn't just see the goal, he sees the play around him, he sees everything in the box. And hence why his assist ratio is so high. And he's a real, real talent.
Yeah, I completely agree. As we said before, as Aaron mentioned, United followed on from the Derby defeat with another two defeats on the trot. I saw some absolutely ridiculous things on Twitter about Jose Mourinho being next for the sack. The Mourinho experiment is over, I think somebody said, which is just completely and utterly ludicrous. You wait three, four years for a manager and sack him within seven games? No, it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
An overreaction, would you say?
Yeah, definitely an overreaction. Like, listen, United have got to be careful, or the supporters at least, that that they don't get into this culture of turning United into a revolving door for managers, because since Fergie left, that's what it's felt like.
It has been.
Because nobody's had any serious time in charge. I mean, how Louis van Gaal got two full seasons is beyond me, but he got it.
Yep.
It's a tough one. We had a debate in work if you go on Mirror Football, you'll find the article. All our writers basically just discussing, has Jose Mourinho lost his magic? My point was, yeah, I think he has lost some of it. I don't think he's a bad manager. I still think he's one of the world's best, but I compared Mourinho to what he was when he was at Porto and the first time he went to Chelsea years ago, and he was charismatic, he was entertaining, he was lively. Now he's a little bit boring.
He does look miserable on the touchline. I have thought that myself.
Yeah, he doesn't have the same levels of energy. He's constantly looking for someone to blame.
Yeah.
And my point that I made was that surely that kind of attitude will rub off on the players. Obviously, after losing three games in a week, nobody expected that to happen.
No.
Especially against the opponents that United had during the week, with PSV and Watford, who they should be beating.
Feyenoord.
They all wear the same colour. Yeah. Same thing, aren't
it's
they?
It's a team that they shouldn't be losing to.
Yeah,
the point.
No, they should be winning that game. And after losing a game, if your manager's then not looking motivated, obviously things might be different in training or anything, but it's got to rub off on the players, is my point. And for that reason, I think maybe he has lost a little bit of his spark.
Okay, that's interesting. I can see that, because a lot of the players do look a little bit passive. There isn't a person in the team that's running the show off. You know, you look to your captain, and Wayne Rooney's not doing that. He's not leading from the front. One of the pundits on the football last night said that Rooney led from the front last night, and I thought, well, the only reason he's led from the front is because he's the captain playing as a striker
against Northampton.
He didn't lead from the front in metaphorical terms. He did it literally, leading the forward line. We mentioned Rooney last week, and since we left off, the debate has only rumbled on more.
I wrote
an article myself last week saying that Rooney should be dropped. Aaron said that on the show last week, and it seems that everybody virtually is in agreement with that now. The only people that disagree with it are the likes of Phil Neville and Paul Scholes, and I don't know if that's their United allegiance or what.
The thing is though, Paul Scholes never actually disagreed with it. He just refused to mention Wayne Rooney in his punditry. After the Watford lost, Scholes went on to make a load of comments and basically said Fellaini's the one who needs to be dropped. Listen, I think that's a fair point. I think Fellaini, although he's had a good season, is probably not a Premier League winning player. It did feel like he didn't want to point the finger at his mate. It seemed like it was that way.
Yeah.
The thing that struck me from the Watford game especially was that United did try that midfield three, obviously with Fellaini and Pogba, and Rooney playing kind of just in front.
Yeah.
That role just in front is what Paul Pogba should be playing. And at the end of the day, when you're spending £89 million on a player, you want to get the £89 million player. Not turn him into something else. You should deploy Pogba in the role that you are paying a world record sum of money for. At the moment, Wayne Rooney's taken up that role. It's a tough one because that role probably is perfect for Rooney. But right now, there's a better option there. And that's why Jose Mourinho, for me, has to drop Wayne Rooney, because you can't look at, all right, okay, listen, Rooney deserves a bit of respect for everything he's done, and not just a bit of respect, he deserves a lot of respect for everything he's done in the game, but Mourinho cannot keep on sacrificing results and performances just to keep him happy. He's got to be a bit brash, he's got to be a bit brutal, and just say, you know what, it's not working, we have to change it. And it'll be interesting to see this weekend whether he does get dropped, because for me, he doesn't get into a United starting 11.
Exactly what I said in the article. Phil Neville said he definitely does start on Saturday against Leicester. I can't see any way in which Mourinho can pick Rooney and not face a backlash from the fans, because he's just not performing at all. But interesting you said about playing Rooney in a position where there's somebody better suited. Isn't that sort of the pattern United have followed in the past 2 years? They bought Darmian as a specialist right back and never played him, or very rarely played him. They've played Valencia there now. He's not a right back. He's a right winger turned into a right back. You've got Daley Blind at centre back. He's not a centre back by trade. He's either a left back or a holding player. Who else have we got? We've got Marcus Rashford, who started as a striker, is now on the wing. Same with Anthony Martial. Fellaini's not a holding midfielder, but he's playing there. It seems to be a bodge job all over the field for United.
Yeah, no, it can get you so far, to be fair. I mean, you look at Daley Blind as, for me, the key example of it. He goes into centre-half and he generally does well at centre-half.
I think he gets found out against the better players.
Exactly, that's the thing, though. He generally does well, but because he isn't a centre-half by trade, he has his inconsistencies, and his inconsistencies do let down United. One in three, one in four games. And he had a very poor game in the Manchester derby. For me, he was at fault for the first goal, where Kevin De Bruyne went through.
He was just completely static, weren't he? Just stood still.
Yeah, no, I don't know where his head was. He wasn't thinking.
No.
That game you can't afford to turn off. But yeah, listen, the players are very adaptable at United. They've clearly shown that. But you need to get all your players playing at the highest level if you're going to win a league. And at the moment, they're not doing that. And so you go back to the Pogba one. You need him playing in his best position to get the best out of him. At the end of the day, he's one of the best midfielders in the world. So you should be playing him, regardless of anything.
You've got to build a team around him. You have to put him on the sheet, in his position, and go, right, what can we fit around him?
Yeah. You can look at United and you go, right, we need a solid core of players. And they've got that spine in a way, because you've got De Gea in net, who's one of the best goalkeepers in the world. Eric Bailly, who's been very impressive at first. Well,
barring one game.
Yeah, for United. Then you've got Pogba in midfield, and you've got Ibrahimovic up front. you've got a spine there. You should build everything around it. And at the moment, people are all over the place and not quite playing in the right position.
Yeah.
And I think that's where Mourinho and United are lacking at the moment.
You can't say the same for Manchester City, though. They look like the league winners to me, even this early on. I mean, I know we've seen stranger things happen, but it's the style of football they're playing and the ease that they're winning with at the minute. They've just gone on leaps and bounds from the derby. I saw somebody said to me that they should have beaten Bournemouth 10-0 and they were actually poor in front of goal, which I thought was a little bit sort of, all right. You know, you're happy with 4-0, but I can see the point. The football they're playing is out of this world at the minute.
Yeah, I was at the Champions League game against Borussia Mönchengladbach. I was one of the seven people who attended. I was sat up on the in the top tier, the Colin Bell stand. Nobody else around us, so we plonked ourselves right in the middle, almost a bird's eye view. Put our feet up, me and my brother, and we just sat and watched and admired the movement, and we were literally just sat there in awe. We were holding our head in our hands on occasions, just going. I mean, to be honest, more baffled as to why the fullback was playing as a centre midfielder, the centre midfielder was playing as a sweeper. Your winger was over on the far wing, even though the other winger was still out there. You know, at times, like, the movement of the players was just something that nobody's ever really seen in England before.
Yeah,
it's something completely new. But it's fluid, it works, and what is an interesting, I've not really seen City defend anything yet.
No.
The defenders are footballers, not defenders, because they don't have to defend. And I don't know whether that's because, it will partially be because City are that good in possession.
They very rarely lose the ball, that's true.
But they don't have to do much actual defending. It's mesmerising to watch, it really is.
One thing I noticed in the derby in particular was the fact that every goal kick, the two centre-backs just split and went to the byline. Yeah. And took possession. I mean, that's something we've seen Barcelona do, but we've never seen it in this country.
Yeah, no, they were. It's just a different style of play. I just hope that, obviously, the Spanish style of play, which Barcelona got a little slow at times, you know, but I don't think Guardiola's game is just keep possession. I think it is keep possession to a point in the, you know, kind of in your own half, you know, don't give it away in a dangerous area.
Yeah.
He gives them the freedom to be creative in, you know, as they get towards the final third.
Who was it who said that? There's somebody who said he likes the rigid formation until you get to the final third, and then you can go where you want as long as you put the ball in there. Was it?
I think it might have been Thierry Henry when he was doing kind of some of his analysis.
It was.
But it's clear to see already, you know, that players. Look at Raheem Sterling. He's absolutely revitalised. Like, he loves taking people on. He's been getting goals. He's been getting shots off. He looks a completely new player just with a change of manager and just a change of instructions.
And the scary thing is that Guardiola's not even come close to fielding his strongest team yet. For me, Company's come back last night. Has he got a new injury?
Guardiola's press conference is tomorrow, so
yeah.
We won't know. I'm sure it'll be asked then, but we don't know anything.
Yeah, so Company's not really played too much this season. Gundogan's not played. Aguero's been banned. yeah. I'm worried for when those three get fit and firing and come back and all in the same team at the same time. Yeah.
And as I said, January, this Gabriel Jesus arrives from Palmeiras in Brazil. He's made his full Brazil debut and scored two goals on it in the past couple of weeks. So you've got another top quality front man coming in. It's just a team full of world-class players.
How would you rate the chances in the Champions League this season? Because obviously we've seen City come close on a few occasions, particularly last year, where I thought there was. I think what's held City back in Europe is sort of naivety. They won't get that with Guardiola.
Yeah, no, there's certainly confidence about the way City play. I mean, yeah, I look at that Pellegrini team last year and think, how did they make the semi-final? Because, in truth, City were not a good team last season.
No, I agree with that.
They were very poor, and in the end, I think they were very lucky to make the top four.
They got a good side of the draw in the Champions League, didn't they? I mean, they played PSG.
Yeah, well, obviously because they won the group, which is something they've never done before. They played Dynamo Kiev in the round of 16.
That's right.
And cruised through that, beat PSG, which is a good result away from home. This year, there's absolutely no reason why they can't go further than the semi-final. They're playing with the swagger and the confidence of a team that would get to the very end of the competition. Whether they win it or not, I don't know. A bit of luck on the day. You'll say City can beat anybody.
Especially with Guardiola now at the helm. He's won the Champions League on X amount of occasions. I can't remember how many times. A lot.
Yeah.
As both player and manager, he knows how to get the job done. And that's the difference, I think, for me. Prior to Guardiola coming in, they've not really had a manager with proven success in Europe in the Champions League.
You get a lot of... you look at the European teams now this year. Real Madrid have dropped points already this season. Barcelona have dropped points twice in the league already this season. Bayern Munich, I mean, they're Bayern Munich, but something... I watched them against Schalke on TV a couple of weeks ago. And Bayern Munich, something didn't quite look right. So you look at all your big players. Juventus as well. They lost to Inter Milan quite recently. You look at them and you think, they've all got faults. They've all got weaknesses. And City are the consistent team in Europe at the moment. So, on that basis...
They should run away with it.
Yeah, let's not get carried away.
We are only five games into the Premier League season. We're not...
City did win their first five games of last season as well.
They did.
I remember what happened. So, yeah, no, it is important not to get too carried away.
Yeah, but from what we've seen...
But there's a reason to get a bit excited.
Yeah, for you, not for me. A bit worried for me. The only sort of negative, I'd say, on City's point is... I don't know. To be honest, I'd not really watched City closely. But Claudio Bravo's performance in the Manchester derby was questionable, to say the least, even though Guardiola said it was the best goalkeeping performance he's ever seen.
I don't know. I don't know whether that was meant to be sarcasm from Guardiola.
It's got to be.
It was a bit... I mean, at the end of the day, he did his job. He kept the ball out the majority of the time.
He didn't have too many shots to save. In terms of... It wasn't like he was bombarded with shots and crosses he had to keep out, but the stuff that he... The stuff that he did, he didn't do particularly well.
No, he didn't. He seems all right with his feet, and most of the time, you know, when he tries the things he tries, you know, he'll get away with it, he'll look good. Obviously, there was one where he should have been sent off for the tackle on Rooney, because it was a poor touch. He found himself in a world of trouble, but...
And obviously the goal.
Yeah, no, I'm sure it'll come all right when he gets to know his teammate, makes a bit better. Builds that relationship with the defence. Remember, he'd only actually trained with City for about 2 days before the derby.
Yeah.
His relationship with his back line would have been non-existent, pretty much, still. So
good point.
He'll get better and better. He'll learn that he won't get as much time on the ball in the Premier League. People will close him down in the Premier League, whereas they wouldn't have done in Spain.
Yeah.
He'll learn that, he'll adapt to that, and I'm sure he'll be all right.
I find it hard to trust goalkeepers that wear short sleeve shirts. I don't know why. Yeah. I look at them and I think, oh God, just doesn't look right to me. I always like a long sleeved shirt on a goalkeeper.
I remember when Fabian Barthez first came over to England. I think he was the first one really who did it consistently.
Yeah.
In England, and
well, that might be it. I'm scarred from having him in United's nets.
Yeah, and I mean he was a bit of a fruitcake every now and again, wasn't he? He was. he was a character. But I remember looking at Barthez and just thinking he doesn't look right.
He doesn't look right, you're right.
Yeah, I mean, you remember old goalkeeping shirts? You used to have that, the long sleeves with like loads and loads of padding down, like, you know, the bottom half of their arms, and then you see him turn up and you think, oh, bloody hell, he's tough, he'll kill someone.
Yeah.
And to myself, I think he probably nearly did once or twice, because he was a madman, but...
Well, he gave a lot of fans heart attacks, I know that.
Yeah, he was exciting to watch, I'll give him that.
Yeah, we'll leave it at that. Another thing I don't trust is left-footed penalty takers. I always think they're not quite as good as right-footers, and I'm not really sure why. For a few little football niches.
With left-sided players, I always find that when you see a right-footed player playing at left-back, you think, oh, you're quite comfortable. If you see a left-footed player playing at right-back, it's like the world's going to end. Like, they don't know where they're going. They look like as if they lose all their... kind of sense of where they are and the direction that they go. It's a bizarre one.
Where do you stand on that? Where do you stand on left footed players playing on the right wing and vice versa? Are you a fan of that? Or are you a bit old school?
If they're on the wing, I don't think it matters which side they're on. I've seen it in work plenty of times. Obviously, for those who are listening for the first time, I follow Curzon Ashton in non-league. and we regularly deploy a left-sided winger on the right side because they have the ability to be able to cut back in, you know, rather than just go round the outside.
Yeah.
Cut back in, you know, create a new angle, and you know, when you're in an attacking position, you can benefit from it. At the back, I don't know, you need to be a lot more composed. You can't.
Yeah, because the out ball at the back is always the one down the wing.
Yeah, and you can't take any risk at the back because, you know, if you make a mistake, you're likely going to concede a goal. So,
yeah.
But
I think it depends on the player as well. You'd never dream of playing Antonio Valencia as a left winger because he's probably the most one-footed player I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I can't remember one single instant in his career at United where he's ever kicked the ball with his left foot. It's like he runs round the ball to kick the ball with his right foot instead of playing a simple pass with his left foot. So it is player dependent, but yeah, there's obviously different options that you can use. A left foot and a left wing can go down the line and put a ball in, a right foot can cut in and have a shot. So
yeah,
it's what you like, I suppose. Moving on. What's the next topic? What have we got? I can see written down here, we've got referees corruption. Okay. Yeah. This is from a few weeks ago, and I meant to touch on it last week.
And a nice, fun, jolly subject to move on to.
Yeah, Brighton up the blues. So, referees corruption, yeah. No, I meant to mention this in last week's episode. Completely forgot, so I apologise for that. But we mentioned Aguero being banned earlier on in the show, and he was banned for an elbow on Winston Reid, was it?
Yes.
Winston Reid. And there was a lot of debate as to whether the referee saw it, because the rule, the law is if the referee sees it, they can't be banned after the game by the FA.
Yeah.
Mark Halsey, I think it was, former Premier League referee, came on Twitter and said that there have been several occasions in his refereeing career where he'd been told by superiors, or I think he was very vague on who had told him, yep. But he said he'd been told by superiors to claim that he'd not seen the incident, so that a player could be banned retrospectively. That's the word I was looking for earlier, retrospectively. Basically, he was implying that the people at the top of the game were filtering down instructions to him to lie in his match reports and say that he'd not seen an incident in order to ban a player, looking back at it. Obviously, that sparked a lot of... a lot of debate on Twitter and things like that. And Aaron, do you still referee?
Not very often.
Sporadically. Yeah. Okay. Well, you've been a referee and you've refereed at a good level. I'm not sure you'll have had people saying
no,
lying in your match report. But as a referee, what do you make of this?
There's a few interesting points which came out of it. I mean, first of all, telling a referee to lie is just shocking. You don't expect it to happen, especially in the English game, where, you know, it seems like we've tried to be as thorough and as honourable, you know, as possible in, you know, as far as refereeing and honesty goes. Bizarrely, I know it's maybe a slightly controversial point, but if the FA are saying, right, we need to deal with this incident because otherwise, you know, someone's going to get away with something that he shouldn't get away for. Really, punishment is being dished out when it should be. Which I know it's a controversial point.
They're going the wrong way about doing it, but yeah, they're making the right outcome.
Absolutely. I mean, the right outcome would be to forget this retrospective action thing and just say, you know what, if there's an incident on the pitch, we can deal with it whenever. We're not going to say, oh, whether he's seen it or whether this happened or this happened. You just say, if it's happened on the pitch, regardless or not whether the referee's seen it, it should be dealt with.
You're saying that the FA should have the ability to overrule an official if they've...
Yeah, absolutely.
If Mark Halsey sees it wasn't Halsey at the time, but if he sees Sergio Aguero elbow Winston Reid and thinks it's actually only a yellow card, Halsey doesn't have the benefit of video replays. Everybody else in the media does. If the FA go, actually, Mark, you got that one wrong, that should be a red card. Yeah. They should have the ability to...
Well, at the end of the day, you can appeal a red card and get a suspension downgraded. Why can't you have one upgraded as well?
Yeah.
For me, if the decisions are right, you know, it should happen. Obviously, the way they've supposedly gone about it or allegedly gone about it is obviously very, very wrong. But, you know, it is what it is. It's bad when you know that people are abusing the positions at the highest level of English football. Obviously, positions in football have been abused at a much, much higher level.
Yep.
Obviously, with FIFA and UEFA and all that. You don't want that filtering into the British game.
No.
Even on the smallest scale.
What do you make of Halsey actually coming out and saying this on a forum like Twitter? It's quite unexpected.
Yeah, well, I mean, Halsey's a funny one because obviously he released a book just after he retired as a referee. He turned down a payoff, which I believe was about £50,000, from the Premier League, basically saying, stay quiet about everything refereeing. Yeah. Every referee gets offered it. Every referee, until Halsey, as far as I believe, has taken it.
Right.
Obviously, Halsey said, no, I'm gonna write a book. Probably thought it was probably more profitable.
Yeah.
Probably was.
Yep.
So, you know, Halsey's not been one to shy away from making a few controversial comments, which is good. It's good to know that people are not just hiding behind the powers. It'll be someone's happy to come out and, you know, and be honest about what's really happening in the game. Because if someone doesn't, then, you know, problems aren't going to be addressed. Just going back to the incident with Aguero and Winston Reid, there was another point which came out which really intrigued me. Andre Mariner said he did see the incident, but he didn't see the full extent of the incident.
Right.
So for me, I mean, I might be slightly talking as a City fan going, yeah, we don't want Aguero. But
yeah.
For me, that says he saw the incident.
Right.
Never before has the full extent of the incident.
It's careful wording, I think. That,
yeah. Come into this retrospective action. He's had his eyes on the incident. He's missed the incident. When I say he's missed the incident, he's seen the incident, but he's not seen exactly what's happened. So the wording of it's wrong. Like, so you look at the Ibrahimovic one, which debate which came up in the derby, his elbow on Otamendi.
Yep.
The referee saw that.
Do you think that was a red card?
Yeah, I do.
It was a bit of a barge, wasn't it? With his...
As far as I see, there was excessive force there, which for me, when it's an elbow, makes it violent conduct.
Yeah.
Which is a red card. It's a tough one. They've just set out a real, real dodgy precedent by saying, okay, yes, the referee has seen it, but he's not quite seen it, so we're going to do it anyway.
Yeah, because that way... Because before, if you were looking at it, you couldn't deny that you'd seen it, but now with this full extent nonsense, the referee can actually get himself out of jail a little bit,
yeah,
and backtrack.
If anything, it is maybe pushing us nearer to the fact that any incident can be reviewed, which is good. It's what the game needs.
Yeah, I agree.
To get away from it. But again, it's just something that needs to be addressed because they need to be very, very careful about the way in which they worded that.
Yeah. Switching gears from one controversy to another, we've got the very popular figure of Joey Barton to discuss. You'll all know that he's been suspended from Rangers for 3 weeks. When asked if he's still a Rangers player, he said, I think so. Which wasn't very conclusive at all. you either are or you aren't. Are or you are not, sorry. That was a bit ambiguous there. Yeah. All came about after the 5-1 drubbing that Rangers took from Celtic. And just after he said that Scott Brown couldn't lace his boots or something to that effect, he lost to Scott Brown's team 5-1, so that was a bit of irony, come back to a bit of karma there. And after that game, Joey Barton had a few choice words with his teammates and his staff and everything else. And the upshot of it is that he's been banned for 3 weeks or 3 more weeks by Rangers. And just recently, just the past few days, a couple of mopeds going past there. this is the high-tech studio that we're in here. We get mopeds flying past. So he's been banned for suspended by the club for another 3 weeks, and since then it's come out that he's breached betting regulations. And Aaron made the point that it's all come in the week that his autobiography is released, and you don't think it's a coincidence?
No, I'm not saying it's not a, I'm not saying, you know, it's happened because his autobiography is coming out. I'm just saying it's very nice for him, isn't it, to know that he's in the headlines just when he wants to be in the headlines.
Yeah.
Listen, Joey Barton is, for me, I find him very entertaining. I really do. I think he talks sense. When he's on TalkSport, as he regularly is as a pundit, and was over the summer, I think he's absolutely brilliant. I think his autobiography is called No Nonsense. That's exactly what he talks. He just It is no nonsense talk. But with Rangers, they knew what they were going to get from him. So if they're going to get offended when they say, Joey, what's your opinion on the derby? And he's going to give quite an honest opinion on, you know, a 5-1 drubbing. If you can't take it, obviously, I don't know how it's all escalated. We don't know exactly what's happening there on the training ground or anything. But you've got to know what you're getting yourself into, getting yourself in for with Joey Barton. It's a tough one. I'm not sure what point I'm trying to make, really. He's a character who you got to control, and I kind of feel like Rangers have already lost control of him.
Was it part of the reason Rangers signed him, that he brings this circus with him?
Maybe. I mean, to be honest, I think they probably signed him because he's at a level... I mean, without meaning any disrespect to Scottish football, he's at a level in his career where he is at the right stage for Scottish football. Scottish football isn't quite, maybe other than the Old Firm match, isn't quite at the same intensity as the Premier League.
No. Well, we saw that with... And the standard's obviously not close. We saw that with Celtic travelling to the new camp. Well, the camp now, as people have started calling it for some unknown reason.
Oh, I don't know. It's balmy, isn't it?
It was never the camp now. It was the new camp, and that's what it remains.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the gulf between Scottish football and English football is huge, as we're saying there.
Yeah, and as I say, it was right for Joey Barton. And we all knew there was going to be some kind of fireworks with the Old Firm derby against Celtic. You know, it was going to kick off, but I mean... Just didn't think it was going to kick off a few days afterwards in the extent that it did. He's an interesting character. He's an intriguing one. I find him fascinating to follow. If the betting allegations are correct, I cannot believe that he would be so stupid.
No, what are the odds? I make no apologies.
I don't get how he can be as stupid, because he actually comes across as quite an intelligent person, really. I know people will completely disagree, but he is. He's smart, he's intelligent, he knows what he's doing. So he must have known what he was doing with those bets, you know, again, if it's true.
Yeah. I had a bit of a chat with a friend of mine saying about arrogance and attitude in sport and how it's more tolerated if you've got ability to back it up. Now, I was saying something like Floyd Mayweather, not many people like him for his personality, but unbelievable sportsman. And so they don't mind his arrogance.
Yeah.
And they don't mind it. What annoys me is when somebody with less ability starts talking the talk and starts being a bit mouthy, but they've not quite got the ability to back it up.
Yeah.
That gets to me a little bit.
I can understand that argument with Joey Barton, but Joey Barton is... really, an experienced and established footballer.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying Barton's a bad player.
Yeah.
The point I'm making, people would tolerate him more if he was at the top of his game playing for England and this and that.
Oh yeah, the people would love him. Listen, if he was scoring 20 goals a season from the centre midfield like Frank Lampard used to, you know, people would go, do what you want, Joey. Yeah, Joey's a national hero.
Yeah.
He's what turns him, makes him a little bit controversial.
It's like with Balotelli. If Balotelli has scored 30 league goals for City, he'd still be at the club, and people wouldn't mind him. He was a complete idiot, Balotelli, in his actions and what he said. But if he'd have actually produced the goods on the pitch, they'd have been far less said about it.
I'll be honest, I was upset when Balotelli left City. I thought he still had something to offer. He was still quite young. I don't think he was quite at his peak. I don't think he was going to keep on developing at City. So I was disappointed when he left. His personality, I just thought, again, was entertaining, a bit like Joey Barton. I do find these people fascinating and entertaining.
I agree. We get too many footballers that just come out with every single cliche in the book when they give an interview. You know, it's thankfully we got the 3 points, and you know, so boring.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's amazing what a personality. If you look at the UFC and what Conor McGregor and his personality has done for the UFC, it's just completely changed the face of that industry.
Yep.
It's made it so much more money, so much more popular, and that's why it demands the paydays that he does. So you need them sorts of people in football as well to keep, I mean, put Scottish football on the map for sure this season. It's made people read a bit more about...
Yeah, for right or wrong.
Yeah, yeah, no, at the end of the day, it's the old cliche, isn't it? That any publicity is good publicity. And that's, in a way, what it is. I think Barton's book, I'm going to get my hands on a copy quite soon. I think it'll be a fascinating read. As I say, I think he'll kind of hold nothing back.
What's the title?
No Nonsense.
Oh, it should do what it says on the tin.
It should do. Again, he's just obviously seems to have created a situation at the perfect time for him.
Yeah, I agree. You can't really knock him for it. He knows what's good for business. We just quickly wanted to wrap up this show by brushing on a couple of teams that we wouldn't normally mention, but they've had a bit of an indifferent start to the season, and that's Stoke and West Ham. Both not performing anywhere near the ability and at the level they did last season.
Yeah, Stoke, to start with, I mean, I read a stat the other day. I think they've conceded 4 goals in 6 of their last 8 Premier League games.
Wow.
It's absolutely staggering. How a team with, you know, it can go, well, how a team can go from being so solid and being what they were, you know, a proper established, even a 9th, 10th place sort of Premier League team to just complete capitulation is just incredible. I think they had a very, very poor transfer window.
Yeah, they've not really signed anybody of note, have they?
Yeah, I think they're the only team who really haven't utilised the Premier League money to its full extent.
Well, if you look at how good they were last season, they beat, off the top of my head, they beat City at home, they beat United at home. I can't remember how many of the other of the big sides they beat, probably a few. But it was the way they beat those teams. They were excellent at home. The Britannia was a fortress.
Yeah, no, it traditionally has been. It's a weird one. Like, you look at all this money that's come into the Premier League, and most teams have taken the money, and rather than saying, right, you know, let's consolidate a position, they're thinking, right, we've got this money, what can we do to make ourselves better? And you look at Stoke signing, you think, they're not really signing many players who you think they're going to make them better. Wilfred Bonny on loan has the potential to score goals, but he's inconsistent, he's frustrating to watch.
Yeah.
Bruno Martins Indy at the back just doesn't look like he's quite settled in yet.
Yeah, I mean, he's an unknown quantity.
He's only been in there a couple of weeks, so I mean, you've got to give him a bit of time, but they've still got players in that team who, let's be honest, you know, aren't good enough for, I think, the level which they wanted to be at. The likes of Charlie Adam, he's a tryer, he's technically quite good, but he's not.
His best years are behind him, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Then you've still got the likes of Glenn Whelan in there, and you just think, Shea Given in net. I know they've got Jack Butland to come back from injury, but they're just not good enough, and I think Mark Hughes has managed it quite poorly. It's quite frustrating.
Similar story with West Ham. West Ham have actually bought a couple of players in the transfer market and showed sort of a little bit of ambition, but it's just not worked for them so far.
No, I mean, it's completely unexpected with them, because obviously when you look at where they were at the end of last season, the brink of the Champions League at one point, and it's just been an absolute train wreck this season. Slaven Bilic can't get it right. They're shipping goals for fun. I mean, to go 4-0 down to West Brom, but a Tony Pulis team has never scored 4 goals in history.
No, let alone this West Brom team.
And to go 4-0 down to West Brom is, I mean, to be honest, it's embarrassing for the supporters.
And they were 3-0 down against Watford at home, was it?
No, they were 2-0 up against Watford at home.
2-0 up against Watford at home and lost 4-2.
And lost 4-2. And they just seem all over the place. But across the back line, not that much has changed. You know, it's the same personnel that had them quite solid last year. Adrian was excellent last year, struggled this season. The centre-backs, excellent last year, struggled this season. That Ogbonna, especially, was brilliant last year, but he doesn't look on it this year.
Yeah, Antonio, since his England call-up.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, at least he's still getting goals.
Yeah, yeah, he scored, yeah. I was going to say, he has bagged a couple of goals.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird one, West Ham, because they've got Antonio, who's the joint top goal scorer in the league. They've got Payet, who's got the most assists in the Premier League, and yet they're in 18th place in the league.
It's a weird one.
It just shows that, you know, in open play, they're just not flowing right.
What did you make of the Andre Ayew signing for £20 million? A bit of an odd one. He's never really set the world alight at Swansea.
he screamed desperation.
It did.
And but then they went and then signed another striker after he was in that Simone Zaza.
Yeah, after his fantastic penalty in the Euros.
Oh, it's going to be on memes forever, that, isn't it?
Replayed and replayed. Years to come, that one.
I think on paper they've actually had a decent transfer window. You look at Andre Ayew, and right, he's never set the world alight, but he was Swansea's best player.
Yeah,
maybe barring Gylfi Sigurdsson.
Yeah.
Premier
League credentials is what you're saying. He's a good, solid player.
Yeah, in and around a good team, he should do well.
But he got injured right away.
He's going to be out for a few more months, right. Which is obviously unfortunate for him.
Has any of this sort of poor start come from the fact they've switched grounds?
Possibly. You saw it when City moved to the Etihad years and years ago, is that you lose that atmosphere, that special place, and obviously Upton Park was unique. I was down there at the start of last season for a Europa League game against a team from Malta who, you know, I've never heard of in my life. I think they were called Burka Cara or something like that. They were literally wearing a kit which looked like it was donated as a Sunday League team's kit, this Burka Cara.
UNICEF.
So it just felt like an absolute nothing game. But the atmosphere was still electric. Like, you get goosebumps when you hear Forever Blowing Bubbles. And, all right, you probably got the same atmosphere during that song before the game at the Olympic Stadium. But then, obviously, everybody splits up. Nobody's sat in the same place. Nobody knows where do the singing people sit or stand at this. Obviously, that's a bit of the row at the moment. The sitting and standing stuff.
Yeah.
But they don't generate the same atmosphere. It's not as intimidating of a place to go. Teams did not like going to Upton Park.
No, the fact they've had to try and cut out the running track as well, and
yeah,
it's a bit of a bodge job. It's not a stadium designed for football.
Yeah, no, it's. But I mean, teams go to the Olympic Stadium and they think, oh wow, I can't wait to go there. I can't wait to go and show off, you know, in this great stadium, those amazing floodlights I've got there, and huge ground, big crowd. You used to go to Upton Park and go, oh, Upton Park, and you know they lose the intimidation. And it's just everything and everyone is just restless there at the moment. And
I think a similar thing happened to Arsenal when they moved to the Emirates, because Highbury was always a really tight pitch and the crowd were almost on top of you, and then they moved to the Emirates and it was sort of pressure's off here.
Yeah. No.
It's sort of a similar sort of thing, so.
Yeah, no, obviously it takes time to move into a new home. It is new surroundings, and in the first stages you are just as familiar with the ground as your opponents. It's almost a neutral venue.
Yeah.
And It's probably had something to do with the move. It's obviously not gone quite as smoothly, and it's not been the fairy tale that everybody thought it would be. But you've got to look at West Ham. You think that they've got the ability in the squad that they should turn it around. They shouldn't be in any danger this season.
No.
But something is drastically wrong at the moment. And to be fair, a lot of people would normally be looking at the manager at this point and go, something's wrong. But I think everybody's got faith in Slaven Bilic, and he's proven in the past that he's a good manager. Both domestically with Besiktas in Turkey and internationally with Croatia. There's no reason why he shouldn't be given time to turn it around, and there's no reason why he won't turn it around.
That was going to be my final point. Do you see either Mark Hughes or Bilic getting axed?
I can see Mark Hughes. I can see Mark Hughes going for sure. I think he's got quite a strong relationship with the board, though, so it might take a little bit more. A little bit longer before he goes.
Well, like you said, he's done good work with Stoke, so it'd be a shame to see him go so early this season.
Yeah, he's transformed Stoke into this, obviously, the renowned Tony Pulis team, the long ball hoof. Can you do it on a wet Tuesday night at Stoke sort of thing to... Well, in fact, Stoke are playing some bloody good football.
Yeah.
So I think he'll get a bit of time. I think they understand that they've got a few new signings in there who still need to gel, maybe. They know they've got the second best goalkeeper, English goalkeeper, behind Joe Hart to come back. I think he'll be given a bit of time, but it's a ruthless industry, and with the amount of money that he's on the line in the Premier League now, it's whether the board can afford to give him so much time. They can't put themselves in a relegation fight, and at the moment it looks like they're going to be set for.
Yep. Okay, we said... When I spoke to Aaron last week, I said to him, 20 minutes for a podcast, nothing, you know, let's not go mad.
Yeah, short and snappy.
Yeah, short and snappy, short and sweet. And it's turned out that this one, again, is 49 minutes long.
We're getting longer by the week.
Yeah, it was 41 last week. It's 49 this week. The bottom line is we could talk for hours and hours, but we're not going to do. We're going to wrap it up there. Aaron, thanks again for coming on. It's a pleasure to get your insights on everything football.
Not a problem.
Just once again, just tell people where people can find you on social media and things like that.
Yeah, no, I write for the Daily Mirror, at Mirror Football on Twitter is where you will find a lot of my articles posted. Myself on Twitter, at Aaron Flan. I'm always happy to talk football, tweet, talk, discuss. You've seen here, we can ramble on for ages. I can do the same on Twitter, so anybody who wants to raise any points, then, you know, do feel free to pop up.
Perfect. Give Aaron a follow on Twitter. You can find us at zipsportsmedia.com. If you listen to this podcast, you probably already know where we are, but just in case you don't, that's where to go for all the latest. Aaron, thank you very much for your time. We are on iTunes. Managed to get this podcast on iTunes, so we've got a lapel mic now. When you clip onto your collar, we're on iTunes. This is the start of something big. We're in the big time now, so if you have joined us early, you're on the bandwagon while there's still room. I appreciate you taking the time out to listen to this podcast, and make sure you listen to the next episode coming to you in 2 weeks' time. Thank you very much.